There's no way I could cover everything in an hour. So I just kind of hit some key things, and through sermons in the future, you'll see more pictures, okay? I'm positive of that. In fact, I've already working on a few sermons. But the other disclaimer is, Chris and I were talking about it. It is impossible for me to communicate some of the emotion that you feel when you're in these places. You guys have been there, you know. Yeah, them too. You just can't. But I'm going to do my best to do some of this. So, and then Melanie has a microphone, so if I miss anything along the way, she can add in. But I'm going to try and move as quick as possible. If you have a question, please stop me and ask, okay? because it, you know, we'll get through it, okay? So if we're here till 10 o'clock, so be it. No, I'm teasing. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with. Do you want the lights on or off? Okay. Yeah, can you turn these off? Because that is like really bright. There you go. Okay.
You're not gonna be able to see notes.
Yeah, I can see my notes. They're on my iPad. The iPad's lit. So we're good. Okay, this is picture number one. this is what is known as the Western Wall. This is day one of our trip. So this is the very first place that we went to. Next picture. Okay, this is again the Western Wall. Next picture. Okay, this is one of the most holy places in Israel today. It is considered a sacred place, so sacred that the men and women do not mix. You really can't see it, but over here to the right, there's a dividing wall to divide the men from the women. When we were there, this was early in the morning. People were coming in by the hundreds to do bar mitzvahs here that particular day. That would have been a Friday. Anyway, whatever day it was, they were doing bar mitzvahs like crazy. They had tables set up, and it was becoming very crazy when we left. But the question was asked, why is the Western Wall so important? This was not the Western Wall of the temple, okay? What this is, next picture, if you could please. I'm not talking about the shrine, but I wanted to show you this picture. Herod the Great, when he ruled Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock was a hill. It was Mount Moriah. So what he did is he built a wall around it and then brought in dirt and leveled it off. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so if we go back a picture, that wall is a retaining wall for that platform, for the Temple Mount. So today, the closest that Jews are allowed to get to Mount Moriah is that wall. And if they were allowed, well, they are allowed, but they don't go up on top. They're fearful of stepping onto the Holy of Holies. So this is the closest they'll go. Does that make sense? So that's why this is such a important place for them. If you go back a picture, Chris, to picture number two, all that white stuff is paper. And what will happen, what is, was explained to me, was that if you're a Jew living in the United States and you have a friend who or a relative that's going to Jerusalem, they write down a prayer, you know, to pray for a brother or cousin or whatever. And then when they give them all these prayers, and then when they get there, they stick them all in the rocks. So that's what all that is.
So the day we were there, the very first day, there weren't many people there. They're there praying for Jewish people, and they're praying for this Israel, the country, the state, and they're praying for the Messiah. And so we were supposed to go on the Temple Mount, and we weren't able to go on the Temple Mount that day because they closed it to us and wouldn't allow anybody, any non-Muslims up there. So,
well, yeah, we'll get to it. Okay.
When we did go to the Temple Mount, what I wanted to say is I have a picture of there were so many Jews there praying, more than that first day, because that was right as Iran and the United States were going back and forth on whether the United States was going to bomb Iran before Iran bombed Israel, and the country was on extreme high alert. It was a good thing we really didn't know that much about it, and we couldn't get any news. But so that day when we were there the second time, there were so many there, and we said, why is it so much busier? He said, because they're praying, because they're scared, and they're praying for that.
Yeah, so, okay. So the next picture number five, Chris, the Holy Sepulchre. This is what most theologians believe is where Christ was crucified and buried. The Catholics and the Greek Orthodox and another high churchy religion have built churches up there, and they actually fight each other over it anyway. When we got there, I told you this morning that it was oppressive with religion. Okay, and this slab of stone here, you can see these two guys praying and touching, and I saw people trying to lay on it and everything. But this stone is supposed to be the stone that Jesus' body was laid out and prepared for burial. Now, chances are it's not, but people believe it and they worship that stone. So the next picture here is at the empty tomb, which is, again, we don't know if this is the actual empty tomb, but it would have been very, very, very similar to the style of the day. Plus, it would have been very close to this. So, again, we don't know, but it was very interesting. You see the doorway in it. That was opened up so people could go in and out, and so the actual opening would have been just a small opening to our left, I guess. That little half circle window is actually a vent, so that as the body decays, it anyway. So, next picture. Okay, this is a stone that came from Syria that would have been exactly to the specifications of what would have been used. Okay, so
it was smaller, but it was the same type.
Yeah, so that's what the tomb would have the opening would have been covered with. So in Matthew chapter 28 verses 1-6. And I'm going to give you a lot of references here, so if you want to write them down, that's fine. If not, come to me later, I can give them to you. But in Matthew chapter 28, verse 6, the Bible says, "He is not here, for he is risen, as he said, come see the place where the Lord lay." And I can just see them ladies going in, Peter and John going in there and just seeing nothing. And man, it was quite an experience. So, yeah.
Yes. Our guide and the pastor that organized this trip said, when you go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and then when you go to the Garden Tomb, I'm going to ask you, which one felt like it was where he was, where he had been put in the tomb? The Garden Tomb, this place, absolutely feels like it was.
Yeah.
The whole Church of the Holy Sepulchre is a Catholic shrine. There's nothing that feels like that was where he was. And archaeology-wise, everything points to this. And we can tell you more about that if you want to know.
Yeah. Okay, so next picture. This is one of the more cool things that I thought was really pretty interesting. I think this is day two of our trip. This is we're standing, this picture is being taken, what would have been the porch of Caiaphas. Who can tell me who Caiaphas is?
He's the high priest.
Okay, he was the high priest. Okay, so when Jesus was taken from the garden, he was marched over to Caiaphas' house for a mock trial. Okay, now if you look down here, kind of in the bottom of the picture, you see those steps. Those would have been the exact steps Jesus had walked up to get to Caiaphas' house. And to me, I just stood there and was like just in awe. Matthew, another reference if you're interested, Matthew 26, verses 74, 75, talk about the trial. And then there was approximately, most theologians believe, about 5 or 6 hours between that trial to when they took him to Pilate. I've just got so many names going in through my head before they took him to Pilate. So the assumption is that there was a holding cell at Caiaphas' house. And archaeology has found that there was a holding cell that they believe was a place that they kept Jesus for those 5 or 6 hours. And so picture number 9, this is the holding cell that is believed to be where Jesus was held under Caiaphas's house. And the way Jesus would have gotten in and out of there is the next picture. Through that. They would have literally lowered him down through on a rope. Now, today we walk down a set of stairs to get down there, but standing in there, understanding the impact of that moment was incredible to know that Jesus would have been there waiting for the next trial and the beating that was getting ready to come his way. So it's pretty impactful. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 1, when the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders and the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. So that would have all taken place right there. Then we went to Bethlehem. This is a picture. Okay, this is the hills surrounding Bethlehem. I found these hills to be very interesting because David would have been a shepherd in these hills. And, you know, oftentimes when we think of a shepherd in, you know, rolling grassy hills and, yeah, no, this is what he would have, lived in. This is the wilderness that he would have been doing his shepherding in. The next picture. Okay, this is inside a cave in Bethlehem. There's no way to know if this is the actual cave where Jesus was born. It is believed to be. But we don't know. But if not, again, it would have been something very, very similar to this. And behind us over here to the left, there would have been a room for the animals and so on and so forth. So anyway, these hills are riddled with these caves. Just they're everywhere. Yeah, we sang Christmas carols in there. It was pretty cool. In Luke chapter 2, verse 7 and 8, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And there was in the same country shepherds abiding in the fields, keeping watch over their flocks by night. So you can imagine this cave surrounded by those fields. So, I mean, literally, there would have been shepherds all around. So, pretty cool. And then the Valley of Elah was next. Boy, I'm actually doing pretty good time here. The Valley of Elah. This is a picture. I don't remember where we're standing, but the Valley of Elah is behind us. And that is the place where the Battle of David and Goliath took place. So next picture. Okay, this is looking across the valley. The mountain in the back would have been where the Philistines would have been. So David would have walked across the brook here that you can see is where I got the rock. he would have picked up his stones and took off across the valley. So the Philistines were on that side. The armies of Israel would have been over here. More than likely, from what we kind of understand, the vantage point of the last picture, Saul and his generals would have been up there looking down into the valley and would have seen it all. So, and is there another picture there, Chris? Yes. Okay, this is just another vantage point of the valley. Again, armies of Israel to the left, Philistines to the right, and this valley in between would have been where David would have killed Goliath. 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 40, and he took his staff in his hand and chose him five smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag and which he had even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Pretty cool, I think, but anyway. And then the next stop on our trip was En Gedi. Anybody know the significance of En Gedi? Yeah, you used to, right? Okay. En Gedi is the water source for the cave of Adullam. Okay, there's a whole valley there. It's called En Gedi today, but in fact, it's called En Gedi in the Bible. But the cave of Adullam, there was a rock slide and an earthquake 2 years ago. Well, no, the rock slide was before, and then there was an earthquake a week before we got there. So the actual cave was closed. They had it closed to tourists. So this is as close as we could get. But the cave would have been just up and to the left of our where we are here. So the rock I have over here came from right below there. So this is an interesting place. 1 Samuel chapter 22. 1 Samuel chapter 24 talks about the cave of Adullam. But what is really cool is this cave is where David snuck up and cut off part of Saul's clothing. Okay? But also, this is the cave where David would have written the 34th Psalm. No, well, it would have been up and to the left. Yeah, it would have been up and to the left there. Again, this is the closest. One of the teenagers in the group tried to climb up, and the park people stopped him pretty quick.
It was
unstable there. But I wanted to read part of the 34th Psalm, the first three verses. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. He wrote those words in that cave just up there, up to the left. And what is really stunning to me in that picture is the fact that here we are standing looking at this oasis, because that's what it was. It was an oasis, and directly behind us is the Dead Sea. So in reality, in Gedi is the only water source for miles in any direction. So when, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, when Saul is pursuing David, he's hot, he's tired. Why? Because he's 1,600 feet below sea level at the Dead Sea. And he needs water, so he comes to En-Gedi, and his army is refreshed, and Saul, goes into the cave to rest, and that's when David cuts off his skirt, and so on and so forth. Pretty cool, yes.
So the reason the water is there is it's a natural spring. Israel has a lot of natural springs that you would not expect to be in this rocky mountainous area. And for me, it was mind-blowing that you can be in mountains, but you're well below sea level. That just was mind-blowing to me. But something else is one of my favorite passages in the Bible is 2 Chronicles 20 with Jehoshaphat, and when the armies are coming against Jehoshaphat. And if you read that passage, it is, especially if you're in a difficult time, that is just an amazing passage. That happened in this same place.
Yes.
And when you think Jehoshaphat was there and all these armies are coming against him in this rocky area, it is, there's rocks and mountains as far as the eye can see. And you're just like, how am I going to fight anybody in this? It's beyond it, but God.
Okay. So while we were at the Dead Sea, we went to, did you guys go to Masada? Yeah, Masada is a really cool, has like zero biblical significance, really. King Herod is about it. But really, really cool. Any of you seen the movie Masada? Oh, you got to see it. Incredible movie. Talk to me later. I'll explain all that. Then we left here and we went to where they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. I'm not going to show, huh? Yeah, Qumran. For time's sake, we're not going to, go in all that, because we could spend a whole, anyway. And then we left there and we went to the Dead Sea. So we got some pictures of the Dead Sea. There you go. Boy, that was. She wouldn't do it. They tell you going in, whatever you wear, plan on throwing away because of the minerals and everything, because you can't get it out of your clothes. So I had previously taken some old clothes so that when I got out, I showered and threw them all away. Anyway, some fun facts about the Dead Sea. A minute ago, I said it's 1,600 feet below sea level. That's not correct. It's 1,400 feet below sea level. Okay. and it's 30 some odd percent solids, so that's why you can't swim. I mean you can't dive. You just can't do it. You just float. In fact, the hardest thing for me was standing up, because my feet didn't want to go down. I literally had to force my legs down, and it almost flipped me over, trying to get up. It's an incredibly weird sensation, not being able to. Anyway, so very oily too. Did you guys go in?
No, we didn't do that.
Oh, okay. Very, very oily. And they tell you, whatever you do, do not, if your eye itches, do not rub your eye or anything. Don't do anything like that. So anyway, it was just a little fun thing we did at the end of the day. Then the next day, we went to the Garden of Gethsemane. Next picture. this is, if you were here that Sunday morning, I made a little video. This is where we shot that little video. It was a little rainy, not too bad, but enough to make it a little uncomfortable. And had our rain gear on. Next picture. These are the olive trees in the Garden of Gethsemane. this is where Jesus prayed all night. Sweat, drops of blood. A lot actually takes place here in the garden. In Luke chapter 22, you can see that. Jesus prays here for for the apostles. He comes back and they're sleeping. Y'all remember the story? Okay, well, that all takes place here. Next picture. This I found to be super cool. So if you're standing in the Garden of Gethsemane, you look across the valley of the Kidron Valley. You look across the Kidron Valley, and there is the Eastern Gates. And that is where Christ is going to return. When he returns, he's going right through those gates. Okay, so here, try and picture this, okay? You're standing in the Garden of Gethsemane. You're looking over the Kidron Valley. You're seeing these gates, and you are actually standing about halfway down on the Mount of Olives. So where did Christ leave the earth? From the Mount of Olives. And he told his apostles, this is where I'm coming back. And when he comes back, he's going to land, he's coming to the Mount of Olives, and he's going to go right across that valley and right through those gates. Because right across there will be the temple. Really cool.
And it's sealed up because the Muslims know that.
Yes.
Okay? They know that he is supposed to come through those gates.
Yeah. Yes.
So, fun fact, okay. There's a natural fault line that runs.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It says when he comes back, the mountain will split.
Yeah, the when he comes back, the mountain is going to split, and it says the water from the Mount of Olives will flow to the Dead Sea and make the Dead Sea the water sweet. That is cool. That's cool. Yes, ma'am. The Mount of Olives. Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
It's in Zechariah, the word.
Okay, Zechariah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, really, really, I think emotion-wise, this is probably where I was probably the most emotional was here. Just looking out, seeing all this stuff, and just, it was pretty cool. The next place that we went... is, I would say, probably the second most emotional place that we went, and that's to Shiloh. Who can tell me what happened at Shiloh? This is really important. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm reading Judges, or I just finished Judges and started 1 Samuel, so that's like where the temple is.
Okay, the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Okay, the tabernacle, when the children of Israel came into the land of Egypt, the land of Israel, and they conquered the land, they needed somewhere to set up the tabernacle. So they set it up in Shiloh. Shiloh is probably most known for Eli and Hannah and Samuel and all that interaction that takes place. so think about this. The tabernacle stayed in Shiloh for 369 years. Our country is how old? Okay, let's put it in perspective, okay? 369 years. And what we found, and I found this to be very interesting, through that 365 years, it had gone from a portable tent to a permanent structure, okay? I'm sure parts of it were original to the original tabernacle, but anyway, it became a permanent structure. So the ruins, they've always known where Shiloh was, okay? They've always known. And what's really cool is this, it's a hill surrounded by hills all the way around. So when the children of Israel would come for their Passover and things, they would camp on those hills all around. And it just blows your mind when you actually see it. Did you guys go to Shiloh?
No.
Okay. So the ruins, the actual ruins. Yeah. You can go ahead and put up a picture. This is part of the ruins that they have found just 6 years ago. They've always known it was there, but I should have taken a picture of it. To the right, about 200 yards, is where they thought it was. But then they started digging on this hill, and they found, and what we're looking at right here is the Holy of Holies. Okay. What picture? No, I wasn't there. Remember, I couldn't hear anything. Yeah, she's got it. Anyway, she's got a picture of our guide standing where the Holy of Holies, exactly go ahead.
So in the last 2 years, they found where he was standing. So if you want to see that picture. And it kind of creeped me that he was standing where it was supposed to be, the Holy of Holies. I mean, I know it's not anymore, but it still was kind of strange. So in their recent excavations in the last 2 years, they found pomegranates.
Golden pomegranates.
Oh, wow. And I am reading this in my Bible reading right now, would have been on the hem of the high priest's garment.
Right. Yeah.
So they've got proof of that. And then are you going on to that next
picture? Yeah. Okay. So next picture. This is what I found to be really cool. This is our guide, Pastor Kurt Skelly. Anyway, where he is sitting would have been the seat of the high priest. So here he is. He's sitting. So Eli, how did Eli die? Anybody know? Okay, he fell over. Okay. He fell over, broke his neck, and died. Okay? Why did he fall over?
Because the
ark had been captured by the Philistines. And when the news got to him that his two sons had died, he was like, oh, okay. He kind of expected it because God had told him. But then when he heard that the ark had been captured, he fell over and died. He would have been sitting right there. Really cool. Now, if you look to the right, there's a wall there. There's a passageway. We couldn't get up in there. I would have taken more pictures. There's a passageway right there that would have led to his living quarters. And if you're familiar with the story, Samuel was close enough so that when he heard the angel, he thought it was Eli, so he went and, you know, so he was close enough to Eli so that if Eli cried out, he was there. And so all of this would have been taking place right there. It just totally blew me away. So anyway, all that can be found in 1 Samuel chapter 4, part of it, and really the first several chapters of 1 Samuel.
You do have the other picture.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, so then we left here and we went down the mountain.
Okay.
And no. We went down the hill. Anyway, at the bottom of the hill is something really, really, really cool. And that's our next picture.
Red heifers.
Red heifers. Okay. Now, this is incredibly important. I had no idea. I had no idea. But the red heifer, in fact, in my Bible reading, I read it yesterday, the importance of the red heifer, because I'm in, was it Leviticus now? Anyway, the red heifer is critical. It's not critical. It's mandatory for the cleansing of the temple. Okay? So the Jews could build a temple, but they could not worship there until it was cleansed. And they needed what? A red heifer. Four of them were found in Texas 2 years ago?
Just over 2 years ago.
And the farmer gave them to the nation of Israel. What the news won't tell you, okay, is, do you have any idea what the date was that they actually landed in Israel?
Passover?
October 6th. 7th. October 7th, 2 years ago. It is the very reason that they attacked Israel, Hamas attacked Israel, was because of these heifers. Israel had not had a red heifer for 1,700 years. And when they landed in the nation of Israel, Hamas said, "We are going," and they attacked. That's the day they attacked.
There's also a couple others we can talk to you about, a couple of other things that played into why they picked October 7th, but that decided it, clinched it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So the news won't tell you that, but the day the attack happened, we saw him. We didn't obviously talk to him, but one of the guys that works there was walking around with his AK-47. And these are like under constant guard, because if Hamas could kill them, they would, because they are that critical to the cleansing of the temple. So really cool.
I have one question.
Yes. So,
the Dome of the Rock, I guess, where the Muslims.
Right.
Is this right next to it?
No, this is like probably 2 or 3 hour drive.
Are they in Jerusalem or not?
No, these, no. They're in Shiloh.
Oh, no. I mean, where the temple is, where you took those pictures, is that in Jerusalem?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm sure you're getting back around. Yeah,
I'm getting back around to that, yeah. Because, in fact, this is the next picture here. The next day after this, we went back to the Temple Mount. We were actually able to get up there. The Muslims built this shrine here on the spot. If you could go in, you would see that the actual, in the middle there, is the actual rock that is the top of Mount Moriah. They showed us some pictures of it. But anyway, in Genesis chapter 22, in verse 14, Mount Moriah is also known as the place where what happened? Abraham sacrificed Isaac, or started to. But what did Abraham tell Isaac?
God will provide
what? God will provide himself a lamb. Yes.
And the Dome of the Rock there, if you're not Muslim, you cannot go in.
Yeah.
You can go up on the mount and look around. It's a holy place. You can't, like, we can't take a picture with the two of us arm in arm. They're very careful about all of that. But you can go up there, but you cannot go in unless you're Muslim.
They actually have Muslim, they call them Muslim police, walking around. They weren't in uniform or anything. But as the groups are going around, policing what they were saying, because you're not allowed to talk about Jesus Christ or anything like that, and you're not, you know, you're not allowed to touch, and so on and so forth. So yes.
Gee, I just went out of my head.
Oh.
Do you know, was the dome, was the, was Mount Moriah part of Esau's inheritance? Is that why the Muslims have it?
No, they have it. Because when Israel was not occupying Israel, they came and took possession of it. And that's why they built that, so they couldn't build a temple on it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So after Isaac and Abraham, about 1,000 years later, David, if you could look to your left, David's palace would be down to the left, probably about 1/4 mile, maybe. He bought this about 1,000 years after Abraham and Isaac. I have the hardest time saying this guy's name, but it was a threshing floor. Arana, the Jebusite. In 2 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 18, and Gad came that day to David and said unto him, go up near an altar, or excuse me, rear an altar unto the Lord in the threshing floor of Arana the Jebusite. So David then goes, he leaves his palace and he goes up the hill not very far, and he buys the threshing floor, which is, I don't know if he knew it or not, but the very place where Abraham sacrificed or tried to sacrifice Isaac, and where the temple would be built. Okay, next picture. okay, now standing on the Temple Mount, looking back across the Kidron Valley, that church there is a Catholic church that's built in the middle of the Garden of Gethsemane. So this is looking back across the valley to the garden. So pretty cool. So, and then the Mount of Olives would be up where all those hotels and everything are up there. So, okay.
Interesting thing, that gold on the Dome of the Rock is real gold.
Yes, it is real gold. Yes. Okay, so we got to hurry. I got a lot to go. Next picture. This is a place called Bethshan. Again, it's not a lot of biblical stuff going on here. It would have been there in the time of Jesus, but it was a Roman city, and it's the most preserved Roman city in all of Israel. It just was really cool. We're sitting in an amphitheater, and we had people stand up there and sing, and you could hear it. It was just incredible. But was really cool here. The maniac of Gadara. let's see. What did my notes say here? The maniac of Gadara would have witnessed for Christ in this city. Okay, we know that because in Mark 5, verses 19 and 20, it says, howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee and hath compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him. And all the men did marvel. So Decapolis was not a city; it was like a region. Okay,
ten Roman
10 different cities, and this would have been one of the cities that the maniac of Gadara had have gone to and witnessed. But then this next picture is kind of a fun one. This is a public toilet. Okay, a cheek for each side, and there you go. Water would have been running underneath it. So it just, anyway, we'll move on.
No doors.
Yeah, it was co-ed. Our next stop is Mount Gilboa. Okay, Mount Gilboa is the site of Gideon's Spring. Okay, one of the rocks I got here was from Gideon's Spring here. This is where Gideon whittled his army down to 300 men, and they went off to fight the enemy. Next picture. That mountain in the back there is where the Midianites would have been encamped. So Israel on this side of the valley, the Midianites on that side of the valley. It would have been that mountain where Gideon and his 300 men would have encircled the camp. So, next picture. Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee. Some fun facts. Sea of Galilee. It's the lowest freshwater lake in the world. The elevation is 700 feet below sea level. Okay? To put it in context, I looked it up. Death Valley is 282 feet below sea level. Okay? So, yeah. And even though it's called the Sea of Galilee, it's smaller than Lake Tahoe. Quite a bit smaller, actually. And today, boats are not allowed on the water after 5:30 in the afternoon. Anybody know why?
Storms.
Because of the storms. We watched one, literally, just when the sun was going down about 5 o'clock, white caps came out of nowhere.
Wow. Was it windy?
Oh, yes. Yes, very windy.
He doesn't have a picture of it. I'll tell you more if you want to know later. But the wind, not this day, but the next day, I think it was, we're going to another one of the cities of Decapolis, and I have never been cut through like wind, and I grew up in the southeast with hurricanes. There's totally, the storms could do what it did, what you read in the Bible.
Okay, yes. Next picture. This is the Sea of Galilee at night. This is taken right back of our hotel that we were staying in. Next picture. And then this is really cool. In Luke chapter 5, in verse 3, it says, "And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust him out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught people out of the ship." Can you go back to the picture, Chris? No. Back. That would be 33. Anyway, there it is. Okay. You see that cove? That would have been the cove that Jesus would have drifted off into and to be able to sit down in the boat and teach. And his voice would have just echoed across the water. And you can see there would have been thousands of people lining the shoreline.
Wow.
That was really cool. Okay. Yes, Capernaum is to the right. Okay, Capernaum, we'll get there in a minute. Okay, the pathway of Jesus. This is just a really cool picture, the next one here. If you're going from Nazareth to the Sea of Galilee, the Jezreel Valley, Jesus would have walked this very path that we walked. because that's the only way you can get from Nazareth to the Sea of Galilee, was through this valley. Pretty cool. Capernaum, Capernaum is located right on the Sea of Galilee. It is the home of Peter, the house where the four guys tore up the roof to lower the lame guy down. All that would have taken place. In Capernaum today, there is an intact synagogue, which is the next picture here. This synagogue is one of the most well intact synagogues in all of Israel from the first century. But what is really incredible is to know that Jesus would have taught here. Okay, this would have been one of the places that Jesus would have come and taught. And every synagogue, I didn't know this, but every synagogue in Israel, if you were to stand up there and turn around, you would be facing Jerusalem. So all the synagogues face Jerusalem. No matter where they are, they all face Jerusalem or the temple, okay? So what is really, really cool is when you stand there, and I did this, I took the next picture looking toward Jerusalem, but there's also something else you see when you look at Jerusalem, look at this. You see this. You think, a spaceship. No, that is actually a Catholic church built over Peter's house. They were able to excavate and prove that it was Peter's house. So when you stand in the synagogue and you look toward Jerusalem, you're looking at Peter's house. And guess where Jesus lived? In Peter's house. I don't know if that's coincidence, but I thought it was really cool. Next, we went to the Mount of... Yes?
Real quick, one of the reasons they know it was Peter's house in the rocks, they found his name and Yeshua in the stones. So Jesus' carved in the walls.
Yeah. Yeah. Next, we went to the Mount of Beatitudes. This is where the Sermon on the Mount would have taken place. This is one of three places. We were just sitting here. The other two areas were not accessible to us. But this is one of three areas where the land is a natural amphitheater, and it's just up the mountain from Capernaum. Did you guys go there? Yeah. So really, really cool spot. Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount would have taken place here. Yes.
This is where I got probably the most chills, because as you're sitting up a little higher, sitting on those rocks, and Kurt Skelly was talking about this scene, and the Sea of Galilee's behind him, and just to think that you were one of the disciples, one of the people there, sitting there listening to him preach that sermon to you, was just overwhelming. Just the feeling that they were right here was overwhelming.
The next picture I have is from the city of Magdala. Our hotel, this actually, if you look to the left, you see a building. That is our hotel. They built the hotel on the ruins of this city. This is one of the synagogues, again, where Jesus would have taught, because the Bible tells us that he taught in every synagogue in Galilee, which would have been this region. So Jesus would have been here. He would have taught. Just outside, there's a main walkway. Jesus would have had to have gone down this road. Really, really cool. stone pulpity looking thing is a replica. The actual original is in Jerusalem in their main museum. But this city would have been, when Jesus would have walked through that valley, what was the name of the valley? The one
right on the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, when you walk through from Nazareth up to going, huh?
Jezreel.
The Jezreel Valley, the first city he would have come to would have been Magdala. So he would have come to Magdala, hung a left, and gone up the coast to Capernaum. So this was just really, really cool right there at our hotel. The next is the city of Dan. Man, I could go on and on and on for hours about the city of Dan. Learned so much there. In fact, there will be many pictures in the future from here. But this, what you're looking at here, is a city gate that has been filled in. You can see the arch in the middle. They filled it in on purpose because they didn't want it to collapse. But this gate dates back all the way to Abraham. This gate is 4,000 years old. And Abraham would have walked in and out of that gate. I don't know. To me, that was really cool. Next picture.
That's the city of Laish.
Oh, Laish. Okay. And then this, and again, we'll talk more about it in the future, but the reason I put it up tonight is this is the headwater to the Jordan River. This is where the Jordan River originates, and obviously as it goes down the mountain, other tributaries come in and feed it and so on and so forth. But this is the headwater. All this water is just coming out of the ground. It's just incredible amounts of water coming from nowhere. We got to go to the Golan Heights. We saw a lot of Syrian buildings that had been blown up back in, was it 67, I think it was. In fact, I have a picture of an old tank from then. Anyway, if you want to see it, I'll show it to you. but this is a bomb shelter on top of the Golan Heights. We actually pulled into like a rest stop area to look out over the valley. I had to get a picture of the bomb shelter. I thought it was cool. Next picture. Okay, this is looking out from the Golan Heights onto the Sea of Galilee. Again, there'll be more talk about this coming up. Then our last day, we started, we did a couple of things, but one of the things, really cool things we did is we went to the Valley of Megiddo. Well, we went to a mountain called Carmel. Hello? You know that one? Okay, we were on Mount Carmel, and we were looking out into the Valley of Megiddo. Anybody know what's going to happen in the Valley of Megiddo? The Battle of Armageddon is going to take place there, and this is it. This is the valley. And next picture. Same valley, just a different angle. It's massive. But it is the only way an army could travel to Jerusalem is through this valley. And that's why this is where God's going to destroy the armies of the world. And our guide pointed out, there is no battle going to take place. God's just going to come and wipe them out. Pretty cool. But anyway, so we're standing where Elijah would have called fire down from heaven. Pretty cool. Did y'all go there?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Next is the Mediterranean Sea. And I'm almost done because I'm out of time. The Mediterranean Sea here. This is Caesarea Maritima, excuse me. This is where Paul spent 2 years in prison before going to Rome. The archaeology here is just incredible. The history is just unbelievable. You want to go to the next picture, Chris? Okay, this is the where the palace would have been. Herod the Great's palace would have been. Now, obviously, in Jesus' day, Herod the Great was dead, but his son was in power. So it was in this palace where Paul stood before King Agrippa and testified what the passage I read this morning. But this is also the place, and as I stood there and I just kind of soaked it all in, this is the place where in Acts chapter 28, Agrippa tells Paul, I believe the saddest verse in the Bible. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian. Right there. And when I was standing there, that verse just kept going over and over in my head. What's interesting here is the prison that Paul was in, they found just recently. They excavated it, and a year ago, they opened it up to the public. So the very prison that Paul spent 2 years in is in his next picture. Now, obviously, they put lighting in there, but it would have been very wet. You can see there's water in there. Been very damp, very wet. But what is very interesting, and I wish I had done it, but if you backed up and took a picture, this dungeon is right below Herod's palace.
At the water,
yeah. Really cool. Chris, you know, okay.
I've got another picture if anybody wants to see it. Herod actually at this spot, well, at Caesarea Maritima, built his palace, the part he lived in, out over the water.
Oh, the archaeology,
tile work that you can see where the water is and how he built it is amazing. Yeah. And so that is just on the other side of this dungeon.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, pretty cool. And then our last picture is another amphitheater in the city of Caesarea Maritima. But this is the place where Herod Antipas, Herod the Great's son, said this. In Acts chapter 12, verses 21 to 23, and upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in his royal apparel, sat upon his throne, and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, it is the voice of a God, not of a man. And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory. And he was eaten with worms, and he gave up the ghost. That would have happened right there. So that's all the pictures. And I'm about 5 minutes late, so not doing too bad. You can turn the lights on. So, I had to talk really fast. So, and trust me, there's a lot more to tell, and you'll hear more and more as time goes on. And I hope that I communicated some of the emotion that goes along with some of these pictures. It is just incredible, and. And again, I want to thank the church for allowing us the opportunity to go and to do this. Any questions? Wow, all that? No.